Follow me, won't you, through a work week, not my work week, which is a full week. At one point, one of my children recently said, "You just work on Sunday, right, Dad?" I was like, "Come on, really? You know better than that." But follow me with, won't you, through a work week, someone else's. Let's call them Joe. Joey, Josephine, Joseph, whatever. Mostly just Joe. Joe's got a job. And it's okay, but you know how it is. Monday morning, the alarm goes off. Ugh. Work. Joe hits snooze and wonders, why? Why do I go to work? You ever wonder that? If you're working a job now or you used to, did you ever think why some Monday mornings? Raise your hands. A few of you? None of you? Yeah, that's what I thought. Now, the first answer is the little red hen's answer, right? That's the first answer that popped into your mind, because I need bread. If I don't plant the seed and water the seed and harvest the grain and mill the grain and bake the bread, then there's no bread. And I like to imagine in this story, this is maybe a Talmudic reading of the little red hen, I like to imagine that she's a good soul, that she's generous, but she's done this before. She's made the bread and did all the work, and she fed all of her friends, even though they didn't help. But have they invited her over to her house for a meal? No, never. And she'd feed them if they were hungry, but they're not. They're just lazy, so no bread for you. I like to imagine that version of the story. This is the first part of the covenant of labor. If you work, you get bread. This is the covenant, that work should lead to food and enough money for shelter and the basic needs of life. If you're able to work and you do so, then you should have sufficient bread. And this is a place where the covenant is broken for many. So Joe gets up that Monday morning and goes to work, and at the end of the day, her boss gives her the $2 and change per hour, waiter's minimum wage, plus the measly tips left by the early customers, and she holds the cash in her hands, and she thinks, well, it's another day of ramen. Another addition to the ever-growing credit card balance, another student loan payment that I'll have to skip. If we want a covenant of labor that respects work, then work should be enough to get by, a living wage. It's not politics, just human dignity. Tuesday. Joe gets up. This Joe has a different job. It's hard work, and he doesn't really enjoy it, but it makes a lot of money, more than he needs, really. Tuesday morning, though, Joe always wonders the question he always is thinking on Tuesday. After that first day is done, and he has to get up and do it again, thinks, why? Why do I need to try so hard to get rich instead of doing what I love? And he hears in the back of his mind his grandfather's old gravelly voice from his childhood remembered, wealth is a sign of godliness. This is what is called the Calvinist work ethic. It works like this: God has chosen in advance who is saved and who is cursed, so says John Calvin, and there's nothing we can do about it. Those who are blessed with this salvation, though, you can tell in this world not by their moral action or by their compassion or their heart, but by their material success. Why would God let them get rich if they weren't blessed? So Calvin says, work hard, get rich, and it's proof that God meant for you to be rich. It's very convenient theology if you're rich. Joe isn't sure why he works so hard at a job he doesn't love, but he knows in his heart that this theology of his grandfather's is nonsense. It's hogwash. No God worth believing in has cursed some to live in poverty and then, on top of that, to suffer for eternity. No God worth believing in authorizes oppression, violence, slavery, or genocide. Surely no God that Jesus believed in, he who said it is easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to get into heaven, surely no God that Jesus believed in wanted us to spend our days only getting rich. No God that Jesus believed in would have proclaimed only rich lives matter or poor lives don't matter. A covenant of labor then will recognize that different labor will be compensated at different levels because we hope of the natural or learned skill needed to do the job, but that all work, all labor, and all who labor have dignity and worth by virtue of their being human and for no other reason. That everyone is a child of God, that everyone is part of the human family, that everyone counts. That is not the covenant of labor that we work in under today, but it should be. And we can help make this real by resisting the cult of wealth for wealth's sake, by articulating our theology that love supersedes our categories and boundaries, exceeds our expectations and our limits. Now, aside, you may wonder why I'm speaking of a covenant of labor and not a contract. The agreement between an employer and an employee is usually a contract. I do this thing, and in return, you pay me this amount. That's how labor usually works, right? There is one major exception, by the way. You all know at least one person whose employment is governed by a covenant and not a contract. Do you have any idea who that might be? Oh, sorry. The board members should at least know the answer to that question. That's me. But even though an individual employment agreement is a contract, it's my contention today that work as a whole, the activity of labor, should be a covenantal relationship. It should be a living promise, a relationship between and among all those who labor and all those who make and sell and buy and who produce and consume, which is to say everyone who is part of society is engaged in this living promise, this covenant. As a society, we should say that we respect the dignity of labor, that people who work, which is all of us at different times in our lives and in different ways, some get paid, some don't, we're all working, should have that work and their lives and bodies respected, should feel a sense of pride in their work, should be able to depend on others and be dependable to others with whom they work, should have a sense of freedom about what kind of work they do, that they can find and answer a calling to serve the world, and a sense of balance between their life of work and the other important parts of their life. And after a life of labor, people should have time in retirement to enjoy the fruits thereof. That's what the covenant of labor should be. But it isn't, is it? In some places it is, but not for everyone and not all the time. And making this covenant real and healthy would be good. It would be good for people of every type and every kind of labor, and good for our souls and good for the earth. And we can do it if, as the poet says, we give a damn and we do something about it instead of just observing and commenting. We can help create a more covenantal and dignified world of work. Wednesday morning. This Joe would be happy, would love to get up and go to work, would be happy to, but the factory closed, and the jobs got shipped off, or maybe a machine does the job now. Joe's skills are no longer needed. He's been downsized and outsourced. Joe would love someone to blame. There's plenty of blame going around, and plenty of folks telling him who to blame. Bad trade deals, immigration, liberals, conservatives, elites, the media, crime, regulations. Plenty of folks tell him who to blame, who to be mad at, who to be afraid of. If he wanted to, he could sit at home all day and be told who to blame. Now, some folks would stereotype Joe and say he's a laid-off factory worker and he can't be that bright, but they'd be wrong, and we know better, don't we? Joe's a student of history. Not History Channel history, but actual history. The history of work and labor and justice. And Joe knows that 400 years ago and 300 years ago and last year and just this week, poor whites in America were told to accept their poverty and not complain because it could be worse. You could be black. Joe knows that racism was invented and is maintained for economic reasons to distract and divide. He knows that this used to be the covenant, such as it was, that whiteness was protected and advantaged, and once you got into the club, which not everyone was in the beginning, not the Irish, not the Italians, not the Poles, but once you were white, then you were in the club, and that was the covenant. He knows that's how it used to be, and sometimes still is. And he knows some folks want to maintain or return to that, but he doesn't. And Joe knows that labor unions came into existence only through struggle, that police were used to murder and beat up organizers, and that the middle class rose and fell with the rise and decline of the union. Singly none, but by union what we will. And Joe can read through the lines. He knows that attempts to frighten and deflect the nonsense and bigotry of walls and nostalgia, he knows this is just bluster, another con by another con man. He knows there's a long tradition of the rich making promises they won't keep to get power they'll misuse, and he ain't no sucker. But he also knows that some of his friends are tempted. They want to believe. And he knows that the breakdown of the covenant, the fact that wages haven't grown very much, that globalization has winners and losers, that resentment and fear are real, he knows this is a recipe for disaster. If not this November, one day. So the covenant of labor must include an anti-racist, inclusive commitment to genuine opportunity and dignity. In a healthy covenant, which we have not really had in this country, we will respect all people and not use racism or xenophobia to obscure practices of economic injustice. And we will ensure that no one, in no industry and no part of the country, is treated like rubbish, like leftovers. That we will not look to saviors or demagogues, but to the power of solidarity, of community, of covenant itself to reshape our common destiny. We will bind each other's wounds and care for each other's hearts. Thursday. Joe is headed to work and she is super excited. She loves the people she works with. Any of you have this? You love the people you work with? I do. I love the people I work with. Joe does too. They're fun. They make her laugh. They work hard, but no one's a jerk about it. There's an implicit covenant between her coworkers that they have each other's back, that they'll harvest the grain and bake the bread together and eat together. Some days she finds a lot of meaning in her work, other days, not so much. But spending the day with people that she mostly enjoys, this makes it more than earning bread, more than finding purpose, it makes it friendship. Spend a lot of time with these people. It's nice to like them. This should be part of the covenant of labor, a sense of team. The people respect each other, comfort and challenge each other in the work. Some places have this, but not all do. And to the extent it is within our power, then it is a simple project, though it takes daily habit. To be the coworker that others want to work with. Whatever the project might be in our lives, to be a good teammate, to reach out and respect, to have each other's back. Friday. Joe will finish today the project they've been working on, the engineering schematics, the 3-week lesson plan, the home they're building, the presentation for the sales team. They will finish it. And Joe will step back and look and feel pride. A thing worth doing, well done, has a shape that satisfies, says the poet Marge Piercy, who writes, I want to be of use, like the pitcher that carries water, like those who haul in a line, for we are made to be used. A thing worth doing, well done, has a shape that satisfies. It's not just making money and counting off the days. He builds a house with his hands. 100 years go by, it stands. So much of our world is disposable, planned obsolescence. To make something that will last, or even if it doesn't last, that's done well, not shoddy or cheap, that's done well, that one can stand back and say, I did that. This feels good. Joe stands back and says, that's done right. And they put away their tools, their gloves, their computer, lock the door perhaps, and go home. Saturday, Sunday. Now, some of us work weekends, but again, thanks to union, most don't. And if you do, hopefully you get some other day off during the week. Saturday, Sunday. The Joes all do different things. Some play with their children, some garden, some hike, some watch football, some read, some go to church or temple or the mosque, some go out to eat, and some go to the farmer's market. For this is the last piece. We wish for a covenant of labor where people earn enough bread and where all have dignity and are treated with dignity, where all are included, none cast aside, none divided. A covenant where we have solidarity and satisfaction of work well done. We wish for all of those things, and we wish for a larger covenant with life. That labor is not all we do, and not for our whole lives. That it is a part of it, vital and important and worthy, but not all of it. We give thanks and we work for a world where work and workers are respected, and we give thanks for all that is our life. We sing our praise and thanks for each day and each hour. Just like the covenant of labor, the covenant of life is not as it should be, not as full and complete as it should be. But just like the covenant of labor, the good news is that we can help to make it better. We can treat all people with dignity. Offer open arms of love, as the Holy loves all. We can refuse divisions and tear down walls. We can be good neighbors and strangers, and we can live lives we are proud of. We can. So let's get to work. Take tomorrow off, that's fine. And then whatever it is you're called to do, whether they pay you or not, whether you're called working or retired or not yet, doesn't matter. Let's get to work. The covenant of life awaits. Let's sing. Please rise in body or spirit for all that is our life.